Conflicts of interest today? No. No public forum. Can we confirm the minutes then from 30th of January? They've been circulated. Somebody's here to move that. Thank you, Councillor Hope, seconded. I can second those. All in favour?
Aye. Aye.
Further discussion will be held in item 10.4. Today we've got further discussion in item 10.1. But yeah, facilitator was arranged for a recent community meeting. Biodiversity action plan. So yeah, this is one that says it's on hold, and I went back through the minutes. I think it actually is. So we've had an action plan, but it did go through committee. And we got it back after
We have been holding on to it because we have been having a bigger conversation about the priorities for biodiversity for us. And as part of that, we spoke last time about, well, in our annual plan workshop, I think it was, about the piece of work that we want to do, which is putting a, you know, a sizable wet plan together and some options. That's right, isn't it, Andrew?
Yeah, that's correct, Sarah. It's probably worth just noting that we've got a piece of work that's going on that incorporates the biodiversity strategy that's been through your formal processes. We're having a good look at the pest management plan, which includes a piece on predator management, which is clearly intimately related with biodiversity. We're also having a look at the organisational capacity, which is largely in the biosecurity area, but typically it's the biosecurity teams that ultimately evolve into the biodiversity team internally in organisations. And I've also had a group of staff visit Taranaki and Hawke's Bay, who are sort of 20 years down the track with this, as a couple of operating models whereby they're big investors, they've got a lot of operating activity and they're quite advanced, as a way of looking back to OSC and asking the question, well, are they going to provide good examples of how you undertake a pretty systematic biodiversity program? And finally, we've approved getting on with our biodiversity inventory piece of work. In other words, an Otago region-wide assessment of biodiversity state as a baseline piece. So there's plenty of action, but all those strands have to be brought together. And I guess it's my view, Sarah, if I can say it, that if you can see the whole, it's going to make a material difference to how you see ultimately what you're going to do and why you're going to do it. Okay, so we are making reasonable progress there. Okay.
Happening, given that we have got some annual plan understandings as well, I guess, from the community. I think it was put in as well for a staff member for this year as well, but good, it's better to have thought it through clearly and launch off on something that actually makes sense rather than just doing it for the sake of it. So we've come a really long way and we have got an implementation plan, so it would be really good if we could see that happening soon.
Thank you. Just in terms of those actions, it does seem strange that some of them seem to be outdated. Is there a way of making sure that we keep them on our radar, but maybe having an updated amount of piece of information in those boxes to let us know where we're actually at?
That's kind of why I went over them today, because normally that is what happens. Yeah.
Well, they've been sitting there for a while and we have asked questions before, so
yeah.
We'll just update them.
I think it's a mistake today. Yeah, that's
okay.
Fine. Thank you. Okay, then. And on to the first paper then, which is 10.1, New Approach for Managing Water in the Priority Catchments. Really important paper to get today. I won't labour on that, but Andrew, did you want to introduce it, or Sarah?
Draw the thread between the workshop, well, the council's previous resolutions, the workshop you had around the priority catchments, and the consultation process in Cromwell on the 26th of February. So suffice to say, there's been a fair amount of legwork done in the last month on this particular subject, both in terms of understanding what the problems that we're trying to address across Arrow, Cardrona, Manuhirakia. As per that presentation we gave you, we then took that presentation in a simpler form to the community meeting in Cromwell. And I'll get Tom to talk to the detail of this, Tom and Anita to talk to the detail. So we undertook that step and we've had, in various forms, we've had a series of meetings with stakeholder groups individually. So, for example, clearly Fish and Game, and I've met with the members of the Manuhirakia irrigator groups on occasion, and we've also had a Mana to Mana meeting last Friday. So it's been a fair journey at a fair pace, but I think we're hopefully retaining the coherence of what we set out to do as per the original presentation we gave you. So this paper reflects, I have to say, we're back in process speak to a large degree as opposed to problem definition stuff today, but I think the process that's being laid out here is pretty consistent with solving the problems that we identified. So That's probably enough from me for the moment.
It is, really important to get the process right and to put it in the context of the wider project as well, which is the water plan review and the TIP, isn't it, that we have already adopted as well. So I am going to give you a chance to summarise where we've come to, Anita and Tom, but I'd also like to come to Chairperson Stephen Woodhead as well to summarise where we got with Mana to Mana. Not all councillors were involved in that meeting last week, so to update us on some of those discussions too. But let's start with the recent community meetings and feedback, if you'd like to.
Yes, yeah. Andrew already, he discussed the context in which the paper should be situated. I don't want to go through the whole paper in detail, but I think perhaps what would be most useful is to take you through the key messages or the key take-home messages from the paper. The paper kind of outlines the responses that we got during the facilitated workshop in Cromwell on the 26th, and it also touches upon the feedback that we got from the stakeholders, such as Fish and Game and IWI, in the weeks following that as well. Really, during the workshop, we felt that most of the participants that were there on the day expressed their support for the approach that we outlined, the approach being that we would develop two plan changes, one for the Arrow and the Cadrona and one for the Manaharikia, that would be undertaken in accordance with the NPSFM requirements. Not plan changes to implement the current plan and put a number of, or a few numbers in the schedules of the current plan, but rather plan changes that actually approach water management in a more holistic way and that are gearing us up towards that next generation water plan. So they would be undertaken as pilots to stage one of the full water plan review. So most participants gave their support, but it was conditional. And the conditions that they gave were that we were would be adequately resourced, that we would have all the technical background information in place before we actually notify a proposal, and also that we would recognize the need for overarching principles, making sure that when we go through those FMUs or those catchments one by one, that we don't lose sight of the overarching principles that should apply to resource management across the region. It's also fair to say that some participants did not support the approach. And in terms of our EV partners, they've expressed some support, but it's not their preferred approach. So to address those concerns from people that didn't support the approach and also from EWI, we think it's prudent to develop a separate work stream that will be undertaken concurrent to those priority catchment plan changes. And that work stream is really designed to develop those overarching principles. So to make sure that while we're developing water plans for the Manaharikia, that we make sure that there's an integrity across how we will manage other FMUs or catchments in the region as well, that we're taking into account the connectedness between water resources and that we give consideration or give effect to the principle of ki uta kitai, so a holistic approach, really. We also want to recognize that if we don't succeed to notify those plan changes before the expiry of the deemed permits, 2021, we need to consider the replacement of deemed permits based on the existing policy. And we'll apply terms for consents that allow us to give to determine the new policy that is needed under the full water plan review. To assist us in undertaking the new approach for the priority catchments, we propose to set up internal teams, teams that are comprised of policy staff as well as science staff, but also supported from by staff from monitoring and compliance team, consent staff as well. We also propose to set up for the Manaharikia a technical advisory group. And in that group, we want to have representatives from the key stakeholders, The goal of the or the aim or purpose of the group would be to develop and implement a technical program that will support the development of those catchment plans. It will also help us to assist with interpreting the findings, the technical findings or the research findings, and translate that into a planning or a policy language. We also propose to set up a community reference group, which will help us with developing scenarios. I think it will also be very useful to use that group in helping us work through identifying all the risks and developing a plan B for if we don't succeed with notifying those plan changes in time. Then finally, I think there are resource implications as well. We think that there will be a need for additional resources because of the additional work stream to develop overarching principles in conjunction with the priority catchment plan changes. Also, resources are needed to develop our partnership approach with IWI and to develop scenarios for the Mana Hierarchy on a zone-by-zone basis as well. So those are the key points that we wanted to make in the report.
Could I just say, perhaps give Stephen a chance to outline Mana to Mana, how that went.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Tom and Andrew have sort of touched on it already, but I just wanted to as you say, explain. So we were asked to convene a Mana to Mana meeting, which is the iwi chairs meeting with council representatives, prior to this committee meeting and likely decisions that would come from that. So the concern there was that the way in which we were talking about processing the or working our way through the water plan review looked to be iterative and incremental, bite by bite, and which they do have some concern about because they want to focus on the whole, but would be happier if there was a framework and some key principles that we could latch back to as we work through the different water plan the different stages of the water plan review, so that was very clearly articulated, and there were some changes to this report and the recommendations as a result of that, and Madam Chair, I might just foreshadow another wee change now to the recommendations, and I'll move the recommendations with a change to recommendation 2. And Liz hopefully can capture this. So recommendation 2 reads, adopts the proposal to simultaneously develop a set of principles. And I want to proposing to add in there and framework for the review of the regional water plan consistent with the values and intent of the partnership with EWI. So it's not just the principles, it's the framework. What is the end goal, if you like, that we're all aiming for as we review chapter by chapter or priority catchments, whatever it might be. It'll clearly be more than just these priority catchments that tend to get the focus. So what are the key overarching principles, whether there are RMA values or our own? And yes, as Tom says, that's an extra block of work. But in many cases, we're working away with communities. And our first conversation is always around those values and principles. So I'm not sure there's going to be too much new come from there, but there is a process that needs to be had with the whole of the region that sets the framework up for the next stage over a number of years. So I'm happy to move the recommendations with that change to recommendation 2, Madam Chair, to help shape discussion.
I've got a question to ask, and I might have something to say after that, but it's of you and I know of Councillor Woodhead. From the outside looking in it, because we weren't part or privy and we've received no written briefing as to the meeting that you've just described, this is the first I've heard of it, and this is the first I've received a report of it, and the first I've had a chance to consider it. So I find that disturbing, and I think that a written report should have been provided to this committee. So that we could have had the chance to consider that before now. And that really is not a very good process that we should be adopting. But I want to ask this. I'm detecting, Chairman Stephen, a sort of merging of two different priorities here. The one is that you're talking about establishing a relationship with iwi to do with the regional water plan and moving towards some sort of partnership, undefined, appallingly undefined, whatever that might be. But then I'm worried about where we are in terms of our work on the priority catchments, where we've already agreed on what the work stream's going to be for the Manuherikia, the Cadrona and the Arrow, and where we're going on that one. And what I'm seeing is two strands coming together like that, when really they should be like that. For example, when you talk about the principles, and this is something that's really interesting to me, the principles, or developing a set of principles, how is that meant to affect the Manuherikia, Arrow and Cadrona? If you're going to be sincere about consulting on principles, this is months and months and months of work. I doubt it would be reconciled before the election. And yet we need to have the Cadrona and the Arrow and the Manuherikia progressed so that when the election comes around, we're a long way down there and we're simply following a path. So can you explain to me how we can develop one without compromising the time of the other?
So the proposal is, and Mrs. Gardner might be able to answer some of the detail, but the proposal is to work concurrently, but the unease by a number of stakeholders, not just iwi, who are our partners, around the incremental nature without understanding the high-level framework principles that we agreed to that were, because this is all the three priority catchments plan changes we're aiming to notify as soon as possible, needs to be done under the framework of the MPSFM, we've agreed on that, so it's part of a whole of water plan review.
Don't the principles of the NPSFM, if I might ask, provide you sufficient guideline as to what the principles are?
There will be some guidance there, and there's some guidance in the RMA, and we also need to seek some input from the Otago community.
So is that going to stop what we agreed on last time, which was Andrew Newman's approach, which was, off we go, we're on our way. Bang.
No, you happy to permit me to comment? No, and that's fundamental, actually, is that we don't stop. How do I put this simply? There's a real risk in planning processes that you get lost in the high level, and that you don't do, and the art of this process is what I would refer to as an and. Actually, you can, within reason, set a set of principles, and they're not necessarily new. There might be some nuances that work their way through, and you can progress. And if I was boiling it down to the essence, dare I start using Manuherikia, if you don't mind me saying, what I think the philosophical issue that we're dealing with between the various participants in this, the real participants in this process, at one end you'll find, and I'm over-exaggerating, right, but treat it as an example, there's 100 years of irrigation activity within the catchment. There's a whole heap of infrastructure associated with that, livelihoods, multi-generational, and so therefore that part of the community sees that whatever adjustments are made if they are made, to the status quo, based on the status quo as the catchment is today, whereas there'll be other participants on the other end of the spectrum who see, well, okay, could you theoretically take the catchment back to a naturalised state, and then ask the question, well, what would you do in terms of the modification of the catchment and the flows and so forth? So that's the nub of this issue, really, in my observation, as I've got round everybody and had to listen to them, isn't lying in there. And so I don't believe that there's anything that should stop us from bridging that gap and that's my advice. And then secondly, I think it's really fundamental that that how I see the reference group, well, I'll go back to the technical group and the reference group. Really, in a pure world, in the technical group, we'd have genuinely pure scientific work going on that says it's not advocacy-driven, it's factual-driven, it's robust, it's tested, it's peer-reviewed, all that sort of stuff. So that's a neutral framework, if you like, and you take the facts or whatever they are as a given. So we need to have a set of terms of reference and people able to do that within that group, and that's urgent because I see a lot of iterative activity going on which is just being done unilaterally by various groups at the moment. So we need to sort that out really quick. Coming to what I've sort of referred to as the reference group, or you could call it a community strategy reference group, in essence, keeping in mind what I just said about the philosophical divide, in a sense, we have to bring a set of scenarios, and they are going to be, so we need to affirm or readjust the zones. So we've popped up this principle of zones. We need to test that and preferably affirm them or adjust them if there's sense in doing that. So we keep a firm eye on the problem definition here and a firm eye on what really, really matters. And then once we've got that sorted out, we are definitely going to be in a process of scenario development around flows, and it'll be a combination of issues. So what's the environmental ecological gain of various flow regimes, and can you quantify that, which is hugely dependent on that technical working group doing its job? And in turn, what is the consequence of those various flow regimes on current, let's cut to the chase, current irrigation and farming activity on the other side? And that'll be a financial and economic impact, and it's definitely going to be there. So we need a conversation with enough of the participants in the room to actually build a shared understanding of both the gains and the consequences. And ultimately, that should lead on to, if there's enough goodwill, and we, the OIC staff, do our job well, which is, we've got to do a really good job here, that should lead on to at least a far better shared understanding of ultimately what's a desirable state, what are the parameters, what are the solutions, and the long-run solutions that foreruns the notification process. So what I'm really getting at, Council of Laws, is that process does not need to stop and wait for an overarching framework, because it's a real conversation anyway, irregardless of the principles, my view.
Thank you,
yep.
And thank you for the question as well. There's two really important time-bound things that we're dealing with. One of them is the issue of deemed permit expiry.
Yep.
The other one is that we need to be compliant with the NPS W, freshwater. So both of them are very time-bound. The second one is actually a massive project in its own as well, to have that done by 2025. And I think Mana to Mana was really helpful, and to the further other discussions we've had as well of, well, okay, yes, we have got some very tight, time-bound, very important issues, and Mani Rerekia is right up there, and Arrow and Cadrona. There's probably some others as well, arguably. But those ones are certainly there, and that's what this paper's partially about. And you've outlined really well the process, and a good one, I think. But the other one is the wider picture, and we've been challenged for where are we heading with that wider project as well. Sure, through the NPS process, you need to do catchment by catchment by catchment, FMUs, whatever an FMU might look like, and then piece that together. But we've been challenged to, shouldn't we be thinking about the structure and the framework up front for this big project as well, What does that look like? What are we trying to head towards? What does the RPS tell us? You know, what are some of these key strands and how's that going to look so that as everybody, whether you're a farmer, whether you're a businessman, whether you're a whatever, a fisherman, you're going to have a good picture of what we're heading towards in Otago. So I think it really is a key point as well. Both need to be happening. So I'm glad that we've got this paper. But, okay. We have got people wanting to speak. You're finished, Councillor
I'm just
Lord,
asking a question, but no,
yeah,
no, no.
You
I've,
might come back.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Councillor Lawton, Councillor Bell, and I think there's someone else. Yep.
Great, thank you. Just being careful about, back to the big picture of what we're setting ourselves up for. We've called this a pilot. As I understand it, just the TAG and the CRG are only for the Manahere care. So we have no community input into the Arrow or the Cadrona.
No,
and are we expecting going forward? So we, in December, we talked about the vehicle at which we will partner with our community and move forward through these plans and gave examples from across the country where different councils have got slightly different models. What's our model going to be? Is this what it's going to look like for every FMU, or are we going to then roll it out with this sort of these two groups, but it would be for the entire region? Because we've called it a pilot. The definition of a pilot is a feasibility study or an experimental trial at a small-scale, short-term experiment. So we're experimenting with our priority catchment. Have we thought about what we're going to do with this?
Look, I don't think, maybe pilot isn't the right word, but the reality is the more we do of this, the more we'll learn, and it's likely that we might make changes to the way we do it over time. But what's being proposed isn't unusual. You call it different things in different places, but you know what we're saying is inside of an FMU, whatever that looks like, you will have particular stakeholders and the places for that engagement to occur in a focused way are inside of those two groups. I would imagine that you would want to do similar for most, if not all, of the rest of the FMUs, but it depends on the issues we are confronted with. We know what the issues are for right now in these catchments. We know that we've probably got a slightly more straightforward situation with Arrow, Cadrona as well, not to quite the same degree. Manuhiriki we know is going to be complex and complicated. But I would imagine that we will learn along the way and make adjustments as we go. But I think these are quite tried and true methods for having an approach that is going to get us where we need to be in the time that we need to get going on.
Tom.
Yeah.
Through
the chair. Yeah, just to respond in terms of how we're going to consult with Manahere Kia and Cadrona and Arrow. I just want to reaffirm what Mrs. Gardner said about, you know, they're quite different. Manahere Kia has a huge scale, a lot of complexity, not just hydrologically, but also in terms of the community. You're dealing with five different irrigation companies. A reference group there seems to be like an adequate forum to kind of test all those different scenarios. With Arrow and Cadrona, we don't want to take any shortcuts in consultation at all. The decision not to go with a reference group is because the scale of those catchments is quite small. The water users are organized literally in one group, and we've got a good relationship with them, and we just are going to continue consulting with them as we have done in the past, which is, in a public forum with everybody present.
While we're on that then, and I know you've got a supplementary, but we're kind of assuming it's a water users issue when Cadrona and Arrow are catchments with lots of issues and lots of people interested from memory, from history and working in those catchments. Some of it's gravel, some of it's Wānaka people are pretty interested in Cadrona, some of it's groundwater springs, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, good question of actually is it, we're very time bound, I know, but let's not cut ourselves off that this is not an important FMU as well.
Yeah,
and same with Arrow.
No, it needs to be
really
encompassing.
I'm really concerned at this stage about not having any detail about any partnership around the outcome of that part of the plan, because I think we'll do an injustice to it.
No. We're kind of working on a project plan, like breaking it down, and those consultation steps with those different communities are built into it. So we're definitely not taking any shortcuts there. We are bound to do it by the NPSFM.
Yeah, and perhaps I'll just add to that, Tom. I think we'll bring you a project plan for these elements, Arrow Cardrona, for Manuhirikia, and Sarah, I think we probably need to turn our thought to a project plan for the overarching piece as well, and you need to see those. All right, so that's probably our next key step actually is to bring those back, which will mean we're still moving at a fair rate. I want to make another really important point here, and that is that in my experience, to actually make progress and get stuff done, you cannot be too diffuse. In other words, we need to get teams that are concentrated on Manuhirikia, a smaller team realistically for Arrow and Cardrona, but just concentrated on Arrow and Cardrona. There will be a little bit of crossover. And similarly, there's a different team to deal with the overarching stuff. Now, you've got to wire it all back together again, but if we don't resource it and manage it that way, we'll fail. So you'll see that as well. Yep.
What are we doing with allocation? It's not mentioned in this paper. And it's mentioned in a note to David Parker, but now I'm very confused. So can someone tell me what we're doing?
Allocation is in. Yeah, that's within
it's
the scope.
It's in.
Yeah.
Within this, also the three priority categories as well.
Yes.
There is no change, and we are abiding by the resolution that was made where you asked for the NPSFM allocation, all the rest of it. So, that resolution is what we've paid attention to, and allocation is absolutely in.
Okay. Thank you.
Councillor Bell. Yeah, Madam Chair, I just would like to say I agreed with Councillor Laws that we probably should have got a report on the Mana and Tamana group, but what question I wanted to ask was who was all in attendance, because at the Tuesday Chairs meeting of the invitees from the Mana Tamana groups, there was only two, I think, and that was Edward and Tahu. Was there any others, and who else was in attendance?
Yes, Mariwa. Yeah. Her surname I've forgotten, was also present. There was three from iwi representatives and four from OSC.
Do they represent different...
Runanga.
Runanga.
All the Runanga chairs were invited.
Yeah, yes. Which is what I understood, and I just wanted to know what actually turned up.
They may not have attended, but felt that they were represented.
Represented or fed into the... Yep.
Okay, Councillor Scott.
Yep, no, thank you. I attended our last meeting in Cromwell, and I thought it was a great meeting, and I think that this report reflects, you know, a lot of the outcomes and thinking and dynamics from that meeting. There's obviously been a lot of work pulling the strands together in terms of this document, and I suspect that was one of the key outcomes of this document, is pulling all those strands together. I don't think there is a perfect solution for this. I think that's one of the issues we've got, is that, you know, like Councillor Laws, you know, has raised some good points, but is there actually a perfect solution? I don't think there is. This is a pragmatic outcome. It achieves what we need to, as well as we can, in terms of the deemed permit process. We're going to notify the Arrow and Cadrona by the end of this year and Manuhirikia by the end of next year. Well done. Well done. Staff hasn't shied from that. They've stood up to that, so well done. Through the crafted words and intent, we've pulled an iwi and we need to work constructively with them. And in relation to 6A, for example, we recognise that a lot of our existing work will be used to guide the framework and so forth, and I think that's the same with the RPS, and there's a lot of detail there in the recommendations. If I was to make 2 points, or ask for 2 things, one of them would be transparency. The iwi processes, I just shake my head. I've had enough of it, you know, as a councillor here for X years, and we keep hearing about these dynamics and processes, you know, no record, no terms of reference, who turns up, who says what, everybody's happy. Well, for this to work, we need to dig a little bit deeper, and I would ask that the councillors are involved in the process more. I really look forward to a Marae visit. Really look forward to a Marae visit, Madam Chair, and actually chewing the fat. So we're all becoming what's that? Yeah. But anyway, so transparency, and also, look, we're setting up this technical group, the reference group, iwi processes, fish and game. We need to figure out how we can do that with some transparency, so everybody, not just us as councillors, but everybody sort of pulled along and can learn from it. And the final thing, Tom, is, you know, marvellous report. But I'm hoping at some point that we can simplify our messages, because I mean, I read the report for a start, and I thought, well, actually, are they trying to actually say here, other than actually keeping people happy? And
I don't think we're keeping people happy necessarily.
and then I finally got it in the care speaks of the new approach. But at some point, in my view, a good message is a simple message. And I just hope we don't just burden ourselves in policy speak. Thank you for your work.
Thank you.
I guess that's a reflection on time frames. We've been coming along so quickly with that. But this Friday, that's just been, we had mana to mana. And that was a great discussion. And yes, there are mana. They probably haven't all been collated and checked yet because it was Friday, and that's a shame. But then they are transparent and they are available and you can read them. And the messages are not hidden or different from what we've heard quite transparently over and over again when Edward comes to talk to us, which are, let's look at this water plan holistically. That's all. That's the only message. Yep.
And it's in there.
Yep. Mm. Thank you. Councillor Kempton, actually, then Laws. Yep.
Thank you. Look, I mean, I've made it known that I actually think that the road we're going down is littered with risk, and I think that we were, my personal view is that we might have chosen a simpler option, but it's where we are, and I accept that. From what I've heard today, the likelihood that this will succeed is, and I'll be quite honest about that, less than 50-50. From what I've heard today, having said that, let's put that aside for a moment. What I really think we need is as important as any of the policy content of this is really, really good management. Now, we had a quite long discussion at Audit and Risk the other day about risk management approaches. I want to know that there is a finely cut risk management plan for every step of the way within reason. Mm. Okay, here, so that if I wanted to, I could find out what the inherent risk is in a key item, and I can find out what you've done about that and what the residual risk is and whether or not that's actually been used. I want to know what the critical path is, the things that, if that doesn't happen, the whole thing, you know, the most critical thing, the whole thing will turn to custard. I'd very much like to be able to see that linked into resource plan so that we can see, well, we're peaking at about 123 people working on this, and what kind of people are they, and have we got them? Now, And I think all those things will be actually necessary. Now, they take a bit of time and effort in themselves, but that's the level that we're at here. We're playing a really high-stakes game. I accept that that's where we are, but, boy, are we going to have to manage this really, really tightly, because we only get one shot. And the other important point is being able to identify really important milestones, which if you don't meet, you've got a plan B. And the plan B better be there in the planning somehow, because that's the level at which we've got to work on this to succeed. And I hope like hell we succeed. I'm not suggesting that we should be giving up, and while I'm not that fussed on this approach, but boy, we're going to have to manage that well. Now, I would really like to be able to see some reporting around those things. I don't want to see every line of the risk plan for this project, and I don't want to see every line of a Gantt chart or anything like that, but I want enough reporting to know that the management is cast iron.
Thank you. Yep. Can't go into a project thinking that we've got a high chance of it failing, to be honest.
Those are the things that will ensure it.
To have worked it out that by this date we've done this, by this date we've done this, and the dates stick, and we move on, we can't fail.
Well, they'll be the success factors. Absolutely.
Yep. Council Lord.
No, I was going to make a very similar point to Trevor. And take you, for example, to 7, about how we're wasting time. We're meant to be establishing a reference group, or these reference groups with formalised terms of reference. Well, what are we going to do? Wait 6 weeks before we actually approve those, because we need to? Or are we going to wait 2 weeks until they come to the council meeting as a result of you doing this today with those formalised terms of reference so we can pass it off and you can save 4 weeks into the process? Are we going to do that?
It's the latter. I'm happy to bring terms of reference for both those groups to the next council meeting.
Yeah, and then we could do it in 2 weeks' time, sign it off, and you've got 4 weeks and off we go.
Dead right. And frankly, I would also, on that theme, and I hear you, Councillor Kempton, on the project management and the risk, that's exactly what we're moving on to post this meeting in terms of putting resource into that framework. But going back to, it would be... Are you happy as a councillor that we bring you one or two names around a chair of the reference group, for example, so we don't go through a long process on that stuff either? There's going to have to be... I think all I'm saying, from the staff end of this process, we need an operating mandate that gives us a bit of space, really.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Okay.
Right.
I can be upfront about it.
That was probably... just about exactly what I was going to say in a slightly different way, which is, you know, we have come back to you at every step of the way with the process, and we've had various resolutions. My concern is that if we have to keep coming back for everything, we are not going to be able to achieve the work we need to do in the time frame. And I guess what I'm asking you to consider is to empower us to do the work we need to do. Otherwise, if we have to keep coming back and getting checks and balances all the way along, that's what will take up the time. So, you know, I have to make choices about whether Tom's writing a paper for you or whether he's progressing, you know, some of the policy. Well, I'm just saying, you know, and there's lots of ways you can do that. So...
Sarah,
right, yep, no, that's good. We can
can't,
have a discussion
well, hang on
what
a second,
we've
though.
Heard now, but through the chair, and
we,
everyone will get a chance to have a say
on
what they've heard. Yep.
We can't make a plan and finalise a plan until you decide... This is where you want to go.
No, but that's fair enough. With
right,
all,
yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, I was just carrying on.
But that's fair enough. But all we're saying is here is, Trevor's saying, we'd like to see what a plan looks like. I don't think that's too difficult. You've already got one in your mind. And secondly, the terms of reference, you will have also given
absolutely
active thought and consideration to that. Mr. Newman said that he can bring that back for the next council meeting. Well, there we are. We've just saved 4 weeks. Off you go. You don't need to worry about the next committee round. And away we go. You must have a rudimentary idea about what a plan would look like, so that can be with that council paper too.
Yeah. We can, Sarah, just if I can make a comment, which is helpful, I think. The Sorry, Madam Chair. I'm being a bit liberal here. Sorry about that. sorry, just put me back in my box if you want. but actually, really the best thing we can do by you as governors is give you a framework, the project plan, and clarity around what are the milestones, what are the risks, how do we report to you on content and progress, right? That's what we need to do. And I think that's an entirely sensible thing for us to do, because you have to govern this process, and equally you're going to be hearing from your communities about whether it's working or not. So that's fundamental. That's a fundamental part that we have to do for you. That then within the machinery, it's inside the machinery and the mechanics of the process and doing this or that, that's our space. That's all I'm saying, really.
Yeah. Can I?
Yep.
Thank you. look, I agree with Andrew, and I suppose all I'm saying is, you know, we need to get the expectation right at the front, because otherwise we'll either run too fast, or we'll go too slow, or we'll bring things to you that will not bring things to you, and there will be a problem with that. So, for example, yes, we can bring you the terms of reference, but, you know, does who's on the panel, for example, or the group, need to come here? Does who chairs it need to come here? Those sorts of things. So what I'm saying is, at the moment, we're in a process where all of those things are funneling up to you, and in order for us to be able to go at speed, we need to know where the boundaries are, and I'm asking you to perhaps think about adjusting them a little.
Oh, that's good. Councillor
Deakin. Yeah, I'll give you my 10 cents worth. I'm really sick of process and no product in this area. Good paper, Tom, or whoever wrote it along with you. And I agree with Brian about that. It seems to be a very good summary of where we're going to and all the negotiations with the key communities up there, and that's great. But I really am tired of having senior staff coming to this table and having staff meetings, which is what it seems to me, rather than coming to us as the governance wing of this organisation and saying, here's the plan, here's the timelines, here's the boom, 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 for us to say yes or no. It's this constant process going on, and rethink and hesitant, repetitive explanations and debates going on among staff members when they come here. I don't get the point of that. It just seems utterly wrong. It's not how the process should work. The paper's good, but I noticed that only one of those recommendations was time-bound. It says they've all got nice action words at the start, but it doesn't say by when. And we should be told that, so that there's a time frame in all of this stuff, in the process work, so that we can see the product is getting closer and the key people are involved. So what I'm suggesting is we disengage the process part, which is the staff doing all their work, from us. We don't need to know all the stuff about who's doing what and who's going to be in charge and who's going to chair a particular meeting. That's the chief executive job, in liaison with her key staff advisors. What we need to know is the strategic big picture, the timeline, the framework, call it what you like. I'm sick of all these process words. Let's just get it on paper, say, here's how it's going to happen, here are the stages, here's the time we'll achieve those stages, and let's go. That's my 20 cents worth. But as a councillor, I am confused and dissatisfied with the process, the way it's going, because there's far too much process and not nearly enough product that we can get our minds onto.
Probably been guilty of asking for that, though, as well, as governors.
Could well be true.
And I think these recommendations are good. As a go, go, do it. You know when the deadline is. You're damn well going to write a project plan for that, because you know how important this is not to fail, and we trust that that is going to happen. And yeah, there'll be accountability, absolutely. The spotlight's right on us all, isn't it? So from here, with these recommendations, there's enough guidance for you to just get on with it, hopefully. That would be how I'd see it. Anyway, Councillor Scott, Councillor Woodhead, use your hand up.
Yeah, I mean, just briefly, you know,
agree with a lot of Michael's sentiment, but at the end of the day, we've been through a challenging time, and we've come out the end of it. Well, we haven't come out the end of it, but we've got to this key milestone. And I agree with, I think, Sarah's sentiment. It's at this point we basically need to hand over to staff to do what they need to do. It's actually not right for a lot of the process to have that political interaction. As soon as there's a problem on the ground, the men here again, they ring up their council and they come here and say, oh, we didn't agree with this, we didn't. It actually needs to be independent. And otherwise, we're going to come up with something that's not robust or it's not fair. You know, so we need to actually sort of pull back. But there are certain things that we do need to know in terms of the framework, and Andrew's articulated those, Trevor's articulated some of it. So give us what we need to do and get on with it in a proper, fair and independent fashion.
And previously we tracked key projects through director's report every time. How's it going? Have we met these targets and the targets were there? And something similar would be okay. Yep.
Thank you.
Someone else, Councillor
Woodhead, most of it's been said, Madam Chair. Essentially what Councillor Scott's just said is we need to trust the process. And that's where we went wobbly last October or whenever it was. And we need to get on with it because, as Councillor Kempton identified, there's some significant risks. So I'd ask that you put the recommendations.
Everyone understands the recommendation and the addition there, which was to number two and included adding as well as
framework.
Set of principles, it was framework, other than that remaining the same.
Sorry, there were some differences, Madam Chair. Number six, you were going to get used to, rid of the word pilot. You agreed that it was inappropriate word, or at least the Chief Executive did. And then can I amend section 7 by establish technical barriers and report progress to the next council meeting? So the last words of after catchment will be and report progress to the next council meeting.
Right.
As a mover, Councillor Woodhead, have enough with that. What about the pilots?
Yes, which one was that?
Number six.
Six.
I wondered as well. It says, before the 1st of January, the plan changes for managing water in those. But actually noting that these will partially cover the MPS freshwater. Because it's not, there will still be bits that need to come in, including groundwater. It's not going to be water management, full stop. It's not the full
plan. No, it's not.
Yeah, it's partially covering that.
So is it notified before 1st January 2021, the partial plan changes for managing water? And changes for partially managing water. I
wouldn't put plan changes in there at all.
Yep, so it's actually just one word.
There could be further changes.
Yeah, there might be a bit of
catchments
for stage one.
And on 7, I think the word that we bring a bring.
So I'm happy with those changes. We're deleting pilots, is that correct?
Yeah, probably
for
not.
Some
really
catchments for stage one of the full water plan review. We've named them, so yep. And the addition to recommendation 7, is that correct?
Got that.
Everyone's clear, yeah.
To be clear, what is point 8 then? To consider the skills and capabilities of an individual to co-chair the referendum.
Oh,
there's nothing in the paper about that. So
No, so I think it's been superseded in the sense. That you're happy for us to bring back the terms of reference, progress on the terms of reference, and also progress on the membership, including a chairman of the reference group.
So delete.
Could delete it.
Delete number 8.
Yeah, that there's a. I mean,
no, it reflects.
Really just so that there's a fair and strategic way in which we actually created those? Is that what?
I think it reflects a little bit of uncertainty at our end as to exactly how much you want to be involved in those types of decisions. That's what that reflects. Whereas I've heard that you're happy to actually trust us to get this right and,
yep.
and tell you.
I do. I mean, I still the question
yep.
is how is it going to work for the entire water plan? I mean, we're putting this together. Are the terms of reference for this group going to be the same as the rest of
yeah. putting this? Yeah.
Good.
Go yeah. Let's go. We've talked about this and hear the point, but we do need to put it.
Yep.
So everyone's clear on what we've got. Clean and put it in the secretary. Great. I will put it. All in favour.
Aye.
Against. Carried.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well done, guys.
Let's pull the trigger for the gun to come out. We're on start line. Again.
Take it as a read.
So director's report could be taken as read, unless you would like to highlight particular things of note.
No, not particularly.
One thing is that MEP have signalled work coming out in the next couple of months in the freshwater space, so three waters and an NPS to consult on. So they are moving quite quickly to try and get some stuff out, so we're anticipating seeing that soon.
Good.
Sorry, can I go to paragraph 21 on page 16, which is headed priority catchments minimum flow. I assume that's the Manuherikia, Cadrona and Arrow, is it?
That's correct.
Yeah.
I didn't think we were thinking that way.
No,
I thought
language.
We were talking minimum flow and allocation were going to be...
So you're correct. The project is still called the Priority Catchments Minimum Flows Project, but it's been superseded by the things that have happened. But it's still... That's what we still call it, even though we know it's bigger than that. So we'll fix the language for next time. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I tripped over that as well, but kind of worked it out.
Just while we're on that then, at some point can you update us on where we're at with Waitaki Aquifer as well, and knowing that we've had public forum and it's been quite clear what they've asked us as well. I'm not asking you to do it right now, but unless you... really want to, but can we be updated on where we're at with that?
I think you'll see that at the council meeting.
Yes, so through you, Madam Chair, that will come at the council meeting and the EPMU conversation.
Right, thank you. Anything else on director's report? No. Okay, I'll put the recommendation that it's received. Somebody here to second that? Councillor Hope, all in favour?
Aye.
Against, carried. Julia, welcome as report writer. We are looking at overseer update, which it's good to see where we're going with overseer in New Zealand and overseer. Mm-hmm. And Julia, if you want to introduce some of the key points that you found.
Good afternoon. This paper is just to note, it looks at two things. It looks at recent updates to overseer, the model used to calculate nutrient loss to the environment, and it also looks at a review undertaken by the Parliamentary Commissioner for the Environment on using overseer in a regulatory context. And the main points to take away from it are that recent updates to overseer now require farms to register as a farm for overseer and pay an annual subscription, as well as also using a certified nutrient advisor to undertake the calculations on overseer to run the model. So that's the main update that's happened there. And in terms of the review by the commissioner, they've seen a number of matters in the model that they would like to be looked at further, basically. So they've recommended that the Minister for Agriculture and the Ministry for the Environment look at the model themselves and provide some guidance as to whether they would like regulators to use it, and if they do, what type of guidance they might have when we are using the model, and also for the review of modelling in general to be undertaken by the Ministry for Science and Innovation, because lots of models are used when regulating, and so that's a little bit of a wider review that they're suggesting there. And that's pretty much the takeaways from the paper.
So, really just for your information and updating us with where we are at. So, Councillor Hope, though.
Well, thank you. I'm just wanting to highlight something to you, which is this. I've been to two workshops recently, one with Councillor Scott here, which we were invited to go to. First one was Dairy NZ, wasn't it? Got that correct, haven't I, at Invermay. The second one I went to was Federated Farmers Day. Actually, it was the third one, and also another Federated Farmers at Balclutha on Overseer. So, and I just wanted to talk about this, and I'm not quite sure if this is the appropriate time, and I apologise if it isn't and I'm hijacking this, but I am quite concerned that we've got a gap. We've got quite a gap here. And it's to do with how important this is and how we get this right. We have a meeting coming up. The one that I went to in Balclutha will be in North Otago, run by Federated Farmers. And I think it's really important as councillors if we can go to this. There just seems to be a big gap that people in the community, especially farmers, are asking us, come to me and said, look, I'm really worried about this overseer. I don't know where to go to get the information, and I've come to you as ORC and nobody seems to know what to do. I'm just highlighting this because I understand that Rachel Ozan is educated on Overseer, but I do know that there's a secondary and an intermediate and a higher advanced level. But there is quite a concern because the field staff, I've noticed it, and I've been there three times on three different days, were approached by farmers. And as intelligent and capable as these ladies are, they're not able to give good answers, and it's a shame our new Director of Science isn't here because it would be good for her to see. So I just want to highlight how important I think it is if we can as councillors go. Now, where I'm angling with this is the big problem will be in North Otago. We've had staff up there who went, and this lovely lady capable was the only one. There were no directors, there was no other councillors, nobody there to support her. She knows her stuff, but she couldn't give them answers. And they've come to me, a lot of them, at these few workshops and identified we've got a real gap there. But we need to go to understand it as well, understand what Overseer is about. Now, you pay the $200. It's different from what it used to be, and the rules have changed. That's one thing we need to get our heads around. And back to the person that does the you know, qualifying or overseeing it. There's not a lot of those people around, and that was another thing that was identified at this day for Federated Farmers in Dairy NZ. There's very few. And you can't really sort of pick and choose. There's only two or three or four in the whole Otago. Sorry to hijack what you're saying, but I think it's really important that you're aware that we've got quite a lot of work to do on this ourselves. We've identified there's a gap, but we need to get it right.
Thank you, Mrs. Speak. But yeah, I think we're well aware of the issues, and we ourselves have all had a workshop on Overseer with an accredited person as well. Actually, not sure if that's in your term, Carmen, but we have done that relatively recently. But yeah, there's a lot of issues with getting it on every farm and it being accurate, but still, it's the tool that we're using. Mrs. Gardner.
So I'm aware of the circumstance that you're talking about, and I know, Councillor Scott, you also had some concerns. We had what I believe was a really successful conversation with a number of the NGOs and four of the key catchment groups just last week, where some of this came up. And I think these are a few things. So one is, and I acknowledged in that conversation that there is confusion out there about 6A generally, and we haven't necessarily helped it. And a part of that is because our staff have been under the impression that they're not able to give advice, and took that very literally, which is slightly different to the way that we're reframing it for them. I think the other thing is that the overseer rule part of 6A is actually really clear. it's a very clear rule. But what we know is that some people are coming to it quite late in the piece. So the current situation is, if you are not growing veggies and you're not growing fruit except for grapes and you haven't got outdoor pigs, I think that's about it. Right now, today, if you're a sheep and beef farmer or a dairy farmer in Otago, you need to be able to, on request, produce your data for us to run through Overseer. Now, I believe that probably isn't the case on a number of farms, possibly sheep and beef more so than dairy. And there has been a lack of clarity around that. I understand one of the questions that our staff had was, well, when are you going to request it? We may never request it. That isn't the point. The rule says you have to have it ready to give to us to run through Overseer. So it's not a case of having your fertiliser folder over here and your effluent folder over here. You actually do have to have it ready. And I also, you know, yes, by 2020 you need to know what your nitrogen levels are and you need to be complying, but I would have thought, you know, just as you've got to keep your tax up and everything else up in a business, you would also be focused on the fact that you need to sort your overseer stuff out at the same time. Now, what our staff aren't is they're not farm advisors, and I think we've said that previously, and they can't, on the spot, give advice about, you know, well, on my property, this is my number, and what will this look like if I do X, Y, Z sort of thing. It's not appropriate that they give that advice, but B, there are so many inputs into understanding what that is, they can't possibly give that on the spot. And the advice they should be giving is you really need to get one of these nutrient management advisors on board for you. Now, if there's a shortage of them, that's a concern, and I'd like to understand that situation a little better. But I think we can be really confident in our rules, really clear. You might use a different tool and get a different number, and it might be lower than what Overseer is telling you, but the rule says Overseer. We can't use anything other than Overseer because that's what the rule says. And while this may sound inflexible, at the end of the day, we have to maintain the integrity of the plan by maintaining, you know, that point of view. We can't start chipping away at it by going, oh, yeah, if you use that tool and it says that would be okay. So I think it's our staff have probably lacked confidence in being able to say those things clearly and feeling empowered enough that they can say them. And so the advice I'm giving to them is I just want them to be clear about what the rule says, what needs to happen, and that they can't give advice on a farm-level basis, but that the best people to do that are nutrient management advisors. So I don't know if that answers some of your concern.
Yeah, look, thank you very much for that. I think that there isn't anything in this report here that changes my understanding around the use of Overseer for regulatory purposes than when 6A arrived. We knew that this was a blunt instrument, but given that it's a blunt instrument, it's actually, if we use it all the time, it's the best benchmark we've got. My question, I guess, is the rate at which we are reviewing the water plan and the rate at which the work that's going on around Overseer, heralded in this report, moves, does that mesh, and might it change our outlook with respect to the back analysis around nutrient discharge that Overseer gives us? Those two things are running along, and it seemed to me that there might actually be a situation in which Overseer is, to a degree, discredited
in this process. I may be wrong.
Right.
Yeah,
it may be discredited, and we are reviewing the water plan. I just think it's an area that we should not forget.
For you, Madam Chair, you happy that I answer that? It's a really good question, and if I just trace the way back to Upton's or the PCE's review, and you're all aware of this, but it's worth just traversing it and then coming back to what it means in a planning framework sense. The floor and overseer, if you want, is that when you get down to an absolute number of in leaching, it's the real world's not quite as simple as that. We all know that, right? It is, in my mind, a useful tool for a farmer to run, particularly across intensive operations, that says, have they got their nutrient management strategy more or less sorted out, and are they optimising it, which was its original purpose. I think what it does in the plan in 6A is it provides ORC with a lever to actually come back and have a conversation with a given farmer if there are evident issues. So it's got some value there, I think. Now, bring it forward to the plan framework development, I would say there are probably some pretty sensible, pragmatic, I'll use this horrible word, tweaks you could do to 6A as you go. For example, there'll be some national benchmark requirements around dairy effluent ponds, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It might be sensible that the plan team brings back some of that adjustment stuff that's complementary with 6A, works off the base of 6A, for example. And an overseer might fit into that category in terms of its use. So it's like you shouldn't ever not, it's not a perfect world out there. I take up Councillor Scott's comments. The reality is in our plan frameworks, you've always got to do some adaptive stuff, and I think that's probably relevant to the use of overseer going forward.
Thank you. Yep. Well, can I ask a question then? Because, Simon Upton essentially dismantled in December the accuracy of overseer.
Mm.
And dismantled it so systematically that I don't know that any regional council in New Zealand could ever bring a prosecution, a successful one, based on overseer. So given that, have we ever prosecuted anybody in the regional council for nutrient leaching based upon overseer figures? We never have.
No.
Right. Okay. So
I don't think we're even quite there yet in the
room. No, but I think what Mr. Newman said was absolutely correct, that it's a useful tool to have in our plan for tracking where we're at in the future. Say, we want, here's an area or a catchment where we've got a problem water quality-wise. Let's try to understand why we've got a problem water quality-wise, and an overall picture of what's happening on the land through overseer will help us with that, but it was probably never intended as a prosecution tool.
Well, it was being used as such by some regional council.
Yeah, not us. Yeah.
No, that's true, but it was being. But the question I come back to is, given the inaccuracy of overseer, have we got alternative mechanisms to measure nutrient leaching?
ORC doesn't in its plan framework. That'd be the first point. And the second point I'd make is that there are models, and for example, in my background, we used one in a particular catchment framework, which essentially took data flowing from overseer and modelled it through to algal growth and periphyton growth in a river system, right? So there are bridging models that exist, but they're not systematically used. The issue is that those models, well, they're a bit like overseer, they'll have holes in them. And then secondly, they're not consistently applied, and there's no transparency in the data inside them. They're a bit black boxy. So this is a real developmental area in reality, and the regulatory processes, because the regulatory framework in this country is moving so fast to try and deal with water quality. It's ahead of, in many cases, actually ahead of the science and the tools that are able to actually track it, absolutely in a regulatory sense. And you're dead right. The ability to actually mount a successful prosecution relies on some evidential tests that the specific issue that you are dealing with is specific to the originating source, i.e. The party that you're trying to prosecute, if that's what you're doing, and you've got to be able to measure it, and it's got to withstand that. So the what I'm really saying, and I'll go back to what I said earlier, I think that there's the evolution of the plan framework can happen in such a way as that you build in things that you can measure, which you know will lead to an environmental performance, and you can get some more solidity into the framework. And I think that's probably where I'll be saying that the plan team needs to take this.
What do you think, Councillor Scott?
So I was just going to remind us that A, it's a model, because B, we're talking about nutrient loss down through the soil profile. B, there's only one nutrient that it deals with, and it's nitrogen. Yeah. Which is, and nitrogen's soluble and invisible, as against sediment, which is the visible picture of our phosphate leaving the system. Phosphate's not soluble as a generalisation, but it attaches to the soil and goes that way. So we just need to be understand those things. That's what's happening on underneath the ground, we'll never get it perfect, and I'm not sure it's going to ever be able to be used as a hard-nosed compliance tool, but it certainly will inform policy and compliance activity on a catchment or sub-catchment scale when we have water quality issues at the bottom end of it somewhere.
Yeah, remember we went down the path of getting really technical with lysimeters and studies of actually measuring the thing,
Don't ask how much money we spend to what it told us.
Okay, Councillor Scott.
Yeah, no, thank you. Three quick points. I attended that workshop at Invermay. I don't have any concerns, really, in terms of what's actually happening out there in the community. The rubber's meeting the road. There's a certain amount of anxiety. There must have been something like 50 consultants, Dairy NZ consultants, in the room. Let them go and talk to their land farmers in charge accordingly and so forth. Once we have a 6A program manager in tow here, I think that'll assist their processes and their messaging. And I agree with Sarah in terms of we've just got to be confident, get up there, say our piece. The second bit, at that Invermay, they actually came out with these case studies. It was quite interesting. And so, for example, they analysed two farms in North Otago and two in South Otago. And, for example, this is a matter of interest, in North Otago, the infrastructure, good effluent system, no feed pad or stand-off pad, 93% K-line irrigated, they had a 57N, and then they did good management practice.
Yeah.
They said they could get it to 31. Good management practice plus mitigation, they could get it to 27. They then told you what profit, how the impact is on profit. Another North Otago farm had a good effluent system, no feed pad or stand-off pad, had 100% border dike irrigated. The N was what?
Over 162.
Yeah. Basically through the border dike. So on that particular farm, what did they have to do? With good management practice and a pivot, they reduced it from 162 to 35. And then from good management practice plus a pivot plus, they got it down to 31. Now in South Otago, with a good effluent system, stand-off pad, no irrigation, it was 41. It was already thereabouts. It's not the same issue in South Otago. So all this blooming carry-on about, you know, anxiety and the ORC, the rubber's met the road, the case studies are there, the consultants are there, they've just got to get on with it. And in relation to our anxiety, it says quite clearly in point 20, the report recognises that in the meantime, Overseer has a place in regulation, it's the best option available. The alternative to modelling is likely to mean more stringent rules on activities which are inflexible and often less desirable than the uncertainty of modelling. Be careful what you're asking for, let's get on with it.
Awesome. Great report.
Happy to move the recommendation, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
You don't want to be in charge.
All in favour?
Aye.
Judy?
Harry.